the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, everybody knows the cost of a college education has gotten more expensive. Today, the average cost of an annual tuition and room and board can run as much as $50,000 a year or even more. Americans are spending nearly $500 billion on education. But could that be ruining their retirement? Joining us on the program is Reshma Kapadia from Barron's. And Reshma, you recently wrote an article, How Your Kids Can Ruin Your Retirement and How to Make Sure They Don't. And this is one of the, I think you start out with the story of a gentleman who planned to retire early, but as a result of debt and things that he'd taken on to put his daughter through school, he's still working at age 68.
Yeah, I mean, so that gentleman had two children later in life. He adopted some kids. And I think part of the problem that happens is that a lot of people, you know, maybe they've planned for sort of college, you know, some average 4-year college costs. But what's happening is that people are continuing to support their children well into adulthood. And so this one gentleman, for example, had a daughter who went through a divorce, and he ended up also helping her. And, you know, you add those costs on, especially as you're getting close to retirement or into retirement, and that can really sort of derail your plans.
And, you know, there are so many options. This is something I have found in my own practice that I think parents are unaware of, either work for school programs, grants that universities have, because, you know, we've all heard about many of these endowments have billions and billions of dollars. Why do you think they don't take advantage of it? And especially if they're in a position where they really can't afford that education without mortgaging the house.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think a lot of people just don't know the resources that are available. And perhaps your clients fit into this, you know, they have you obviously to guide them. But I think more affluent folks also just assume that they are not going to qualify for financial aid, and they don't even think about it or go through the motions. And as you mentioned, these endowments, there are a lot of schools that are willing to give you merit-based aid. You know, it doesn't have to be just for sports. Obviously, we're seeing with the college scandal, there's a whole swirl of activity around that. But I mean, there are schools that have money, and sometimes the difference between going to a school that's ranked number 35 and ranked 55, there's not that much of a difference. I think people have these certain ideas in their head, and it's really, people don't approach them like they do every other investment that they make. You know, I think you have to look at sort of the return on investment and look at it through that prism. And there are many different ways of sort of bringing in that cost. You know, I think you've talked about sort of going to community college or, you know, looking at state schools and just having a realistic expectation of what schools cost too. I think if you look at like the average state school, but you live in Pennsylvania or Vermont, the state schools there can cost 40 to 60% more than the average. So just having a real sort of clear idea of what, you know, what these things can cost you.
And the other thing, too, is it was featured in part of your article, is the cost between, let's say, a private and a public education is skyrocketed recently. Don't you think that's something that maybe the student and parent, I mean, we'd all love as a parent if your kid gets into Stanford or Harvard or MIT, but you have to weigh, I think, in many cases for most professions, if, let's say, I was going to major in finance, would it be really that much better for me if I went to Harvard versus, let's say, UCSD here or San Diego University? In other words, is the job prospects so much better to justify the additional cost?
So I think talking to planners, there are sort of that dozen or so schools, you know, the Harvards, the Stanfords, the Yales of the world, where even financial advisors are willing to sort of say, like, these schools, maybe if you can somehow make it work, you know, you examine your options, there might be a case for sort of spending money here. But beyond that 12, you know, or 15, I think it's a much harder case to make, you know, and I think people need to look at that. You know, I talked to one planner who talked about how people are often sort of have, you know, their heart set on something. Maybe they went to school there, or they've, you know, grown up thinking that their, you know, family's going to continue this tradition. But that school is not really going to help their child that much more in whatever field they've chosen to go into. And so it's kind of taking a little bit of the emotion away, I think, in looking at the numbers. I will allow that there are certain schools where the networking or just the prestige of that sort of small group of schools, some people do make a case based on whether if you're going into finance, for example, maybe it does help to go to a Harvard, you know, whereas if you're going to go to med school, I don't know if you need to go to Harvard for the first 4 years versus somewhere else. So those are all things that you are good to sort of talk to people who are experts in whatever field you want to go into and the college counselors that are out there.
You know, another issue that hits parents too is even after putting them through college and a four-year degree, let's say junior or maybe their daughter gets into a profession that there really isn't much work for. Ethnic studies, unless you're going to become a teacher, there aren't very many good job prospects. So in the end, after paying for the college, they're still living at home and you're still supporting them in some way.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, talking to financial advisors, that was sort of the place that really kind of trips people up is this idea that people are paying for their adult children much longer. There are many different reasons, one of which is maybe they did take on loans for that college education and now they're dealing with that loan and also struggling to pay for rent or a mortgage or, you know, whatever that may be. But we're in a different type of job market too, and the cost of living in many of these cities is quite high. So even if you had a great major and you got a job, you may still need help. And I think that that's what's happening. So it's obviously there are more kids that are coming back and living at home. I think it's double the percentage of, you know, earlier generations. But it's not just those who are coming back and living at home. It's also those who've decided to go live somewhere and mom and dad are helping them, not just with rent, but often with, you know, insurance, car payments, things that may start small and continue because that assistance then sometimes creates bad financial habits in that adult child as they're going along too. There are a lot of planners who talked about how, you know, mom and dad offers to pay a down payment in a house that's perhaps in a more affluent neighborhood than the child can afford on their own. And that, you know, the grandparents want to be near their grandchildren. And so they're willing to kind of give that assistance. But then that family is kind of caught up in the lifestyle of that neighborhood, sometimes stretching beyond their own means. And so it creates this cycle. So those are things to consider. And there are ways to help your children if you have the means to do so without kind of creating that bad cycle.
You know, we're dealing with a situation a number of years back, Rushma, where a client had three children. Their oldest daughter got accepted to a A-rated school, but she wanted to be a teacher. And the problem is going to that school would have cost nearly $200,000. And of course, when your child gets accepted to a top A-rated school, you're very proud about it. But I thought, you know, does it make sense to spend $200,000 and she wants to be a teacher that's going to be paying $60,000 a year? It didn't make sense. And she ended up going to just a state university, which saved the parents quite a bit of money.
Yeah. I mean, and those are calculations that people need to make. And I think that those are very difficult, very emotional conversations to have. They don't happen often. But kind of, I think a part of it is also just this reluctance to talk about money with your children and sort of the, you know, the secrecy around it. It's a lot easier to have that conversation with your child if they have some sense of what it does to the family finances.
You know, the other thing I have found, and I'd like to get your take on this, many times when children are, you know, they're just expected, you're going to go to college, so they start their freshman and sophomore year, they really don't know what they want to be. So what is wrong if, let's say, mom and dad send junior to the local junior college where you're taking, you know, your English 101 courses and the basic prerequisites until you really find out what it is that you're interested in?
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that is an option that many people are looking at more and more, in part because just of the increase that we've seen in college costs. So it seems like that is actually gaining some traction, which could make it easier to do that emotionally for people as well.
You know, one of the things that we have found that works, and especially this will really come in handy if you're listening to this program, and let's say you're a parent of three or four children, and we call it our 2+2 program, Rushma, where junior goes 2 years to a junior college. He lives at home, so you're not paying room and board. And then he goes to a local university and stays at home and works during this program. And we have two interns that we are now, one will become full-time with us when he graduates in May, but he'll graduate with 3 years worth of work experience in his profession. He will have no student loans. Mom and dad don't have any debt because junior was working and he paid his own way through school. What's wrong with, let's say, working your way through college, which is, I don't know, that's what I had to do. I came from a large family. There was no way with 10 kids my parents could afford to put us all through school.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's what I did as well. And I graduated early to save costs. So, I mean, obviously people do it. I think it's great if you can do it. Not everyone can for a whole slew of reasons. And so, I mean, I think anything that you can do to sort of lower your costs and not take on debt is a great thing, you know? And so for those people who are looking at student loans, I mean, when I did talk to other advisors, I mean, they said to be realistic about that debt that you were taking on. You know, these kids are graduating with so much and often in moving into careers where they are really going to not be able to pay them. So, you know, one advisor kind of gave me a rule of thumb of, you know, don't take on any more debt than 5 to 10 years of being able to pay that off at whatever salary you're planning on getting. If you're going to be a teacher, then you should allocate, you know, think about that from that lens, and how much will you be able to sort of bear every year for, you know, to be able to pay it off in 5 to 10 years. I'm sure there are other people who, you know, don't want to have any debt. And if that's possible, that's great. But I think that's something to consider. And so when parents are also helping their kids, you know, we always hear about how you should put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help your children on an airplane. It's sort of the same scenario. People do not recommend taking out like a federal Parent PLUS loan to help their children. It's better to help, you know, have the kids take on the debt. And then down the road, if you have money left over, you can help them pay off that debt or help support them in other ways. But there is really sort of this advice to not sort of take on debt yourself, especially if you're at or near retirement.
Yeah, we usually recommend, especially if there's the possibility that the local universities or ones nearby can satisfy, let's say, a particular profession that a student wants to go into, we recommend the 2+2 program. And in our case, especially here in California, where everything is so expensive, Reshma, we don't recommend more than 5 years' worth of salary in debt, because in California, our definition of a millionaire is a homeowner. So it gets so expensive. What about the idea of, I think the figure, you probably know this better than I do, it's something like $1.5 trillion. What's going to be done with all the student loans? I mean, much of it just simply can't get paid back. They just don't have the income or the jobs. That's number one. And a follow-up question is, what could be done to bring the cost of college down? In other words, like, let's say Junior works and maybe goes to online college. This is another thing that we're starting to recommend, so that at least Junior can get work experience, number one, and earn income to pay for that college.
$1.5 trillion number is such a large number. And so, you know, I've talked to folks who are involved in sort of trying to figure out what to do about that situation. You know, Sheila Bair, who's the head of the FDIC, has been sort of passionate about that topic. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that we're seeing some of these other trends of kids living at home, you know, millennials not buying their first home for a while. I mean, it actually has a huge impact on the economy, and that continues to grow. Just think about having that around your neck as you're trying to sort of get your lives together. And even, you know, if you look at the number of people who have debt as they age, I think that there was a sixfold increase in the amount of educational debt between 2001 and 2016. And the biggest increase came from those who were 40 and up. So some of that was their own debt that they were still paying off. And some of it was because they had taken on their children's debt. So this is a major issue, and it has economic consequences. I mean, you talked about your 2+2 program working, you know, basically anything you can do to lower the cost for yourself. But I think as a broader topic, I mean, the academic institutions need to start thinking about this, and the government needs to start thinking about this. And I know that President Trump has talked a little bit about, you know, how much people can borrow for student debt and looking at that situation. So at some point, something's going to have to happen. I know that Sheila Bair has talked a little bit about getting universities to have some skin in the game, because right now they can keep raising prices and you and I or other parents can go out and keep borrowing debt to pay those higher prices. And the universities, it doesn't really matter if that person graduates or not. So at some point, maybe we need to rethink sort of the system.
Yeah, because, you know, your article about how this can impact retirement, you have a statistic, 70% of seniors age 65 and 74, between those ages, have debt. And I remember when I got in the business in 1981, I mean, that was the greatest generation. They had no debt. All they had was savings. That's changed.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, but and 39% of that is housing related. But I mean, I think we do need to look at the backdrop, which is we've had about a decade of sort of historically low interest rates, right? So like at some point, some of that might be wise, right? You've taken on like a 3% home equity line of credit or whatever. You know, you've taken a very low amount of debt on to then use that money to invest it and get better returns. Maybe a bit of that is that sort of scenario. But going into retirement, as you well know, with debt does create some major issues, and you have to adjust for that. And so I think some of the advice that I've gotten from folks is, okay, fine, if you've taken on that debt, hopefully you have that money stocked away somewhere that you can pay off that debt if rates on your HELOC, for example, go up. And alternatively, you should perhaps think about your asset allocation a little bit differently because you have sort of this debt still looming over you. So, I mean, I think that it's a very large number and it is concerning in many ways. We do have to think about the backdrop that we've had in terms of low interest rates. I'm sure part of that is because of that, but it is an issue. I mean, it goes against that sort of golden rule of make sure you paid off all your debt before you, you know, collect your last paycheck.
You know, you say some of the problem stems from the fact that maybe parents are just reluctant to talk finances with their kids. But what about having that honest conversation? Let's say you're age 50, you've got a couple of kids. One is an Einstein and is looking at getting into, let's say, an A-rated school, Harvard, Stanford. And having a conversation about alternatives with your son or daughter about just the realities of your financial situation.
I mean, I think that that's a role that financial advisors can play. I mean, especially as that sort of help continues into adulthood and perhaps helps enable some behavior. I mean, I think that the advice I heard over and over again is that the parent doesn't want to be the bad guy. Okay, fine. To bring in the financial advisor or someone else to kind of run the numbers to show them. Because I think, you know, kids, I mean, no kid wants to, you know, have their parents sort of bankrupted because they went to a college. You know, I think that it creates, and transparency is always a good thing. And so if you sit down and help them understand sort of what the costs are, what you truly can afford, I think that's a discussion that every family should be having when it comes to money, and not just about college, but going forward. And also it helps with estate planning down the road too. You know, if you've, you know, given one child more money for XYZ to go to Stanford and another, you know, less, I mean, those are all things that sometimes come up in the estate planning situation after you're gone. And it's better to have had transparent conversations along the way.
You know, that was one of the ways we solved with the client that had the daughter that got into an A-rated school. We gave and showed her three different options. We showed one, if mom and dad took out a mortgage on their home, the additional cost that would cost their parents, and also how much it would delay. Secondly, we showed her if she went into debt to go to school, how much that debt would be and how much it would set her back probably the first decade of her life. And it was after looking at those options, the obvious choice became apparent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and as you well know, I mean, the financial literacy in this country is quite low, and we don't do enough to prepare people at different stages of their lives to understand sort of the impact of debt and the impact of these kinds of costs and how those, you know, things can spiral and compound and really sort of set you back for years to come, not just for the 4 or 8 years that you're in school.
Well, I want to congratulate you, Reshma. You hit upon a topic, and especially with graduation coming next month, where a lot of parents will have their kids be graduating from high school and thinking about college costs. This is a subject that really needs to be delved into if you are a parent and look at those costs. What it might mean for your children, but also what it might mean for your own retirement. Reshma, thanks so much for joining us. You can read the article. It was on last week's Barron's. It was called How Your Kids Can Ruin Your Retirement and How to Make Sure They Don't. Reshma, thanks for joining us on the program. All the best to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.